Hello and welcome to Geraumt, our podcast for the topics of design and spatial interventions. My name is Christian Lunger. I'm a service designer and information designer. And today we are talking about quite an interesting topic that follows us in our work. And I was quite happy to convince somebody who has a very profound view on the topic of sustainability and wayfinding. And the person I'm about to talk to is Eric Sorensen Ruiz. He's the Sustainability and Global Partnership Manager at Modulex. And his job actually is to help organizations to reduce the environmental impact through smarter designs in their projects. And just for those of you who do not know Modulex, Modulex is a global player in the field of architectural signage and branded environments. And they have over 60 years of experience in that field. And so I'm really looking forward to our talk. Eric, the first question is an open question. How is the approach of Modulex to the big topic of sustainability? And well, thank you for your time and this conversation we are about to have.
Thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure. And yeah, so in the topic of how we approach sustainability, I think it's something that, you know, runs in the very DNA of Modulex. We were founded by the LEGO Group over 60 years ago. And within Denmark, it's certainly a very important part of how we conduct business and corporate development. We also come from a background of modular signage. So I guess, you know, even if it's not directly to think about sustainability back in the early days, we're a company that has always been very oriented to reducing waste and designing in smart ways. So I guess the way we approach it now is very much defined by our own strategy and purpose. We became a purpose-driven company a couple of years ago, and that was a long process in trying to define what Modulex is existing for and what impact we're trying to have in the world. And sustainability is certainly a core pillar of that. And the way that we approach it, I would say, like any other company that at one point or another manufactures and delivers a product, even if that's surrounded by services or following a service model, a lot of the impact of what we deliver to our clients is material based. So I think one of the main pillars in our sustainability strategy is about material development and innovation within that field. The other main area would be in the more holistic way in which we approach projects and the way we design them. In a way, architectural signage is making spaces more accessible. And I think that's also a very important part in this conversation as well. So that's more or less how we approach it from a 30,000 feet view.
Before we're coming into the details, you know, of materials and design approaches, what impressed me is when I prepared for this podcast and looked through the materials that you sent me, is that if you talk about sustainability, you actually talk about the, let's say, the level above that. So the whole social responsibility aspect as well. So it's integrated within this whole concept as well. So you not just talk about the materials and the design, but the overall responsibility is quite closely connected. Did I understand that correctly?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's sort of like a natural next step with the way corporate sustainability has evolved and the way companies have to be accountable for their reporting and the different areas of impact that they have. Sustainability is no longer just environment. It has the S and the G as well, so social and governance. And as a result of tackling that and addressing that internally and within our strategy, I think it's obvious, I would say, to also address that in the way we impact our clients and the way we deliver our projects. And certainly, even if signage has a very important environmental pillar in the sense that it is a physical element within an architectural space, it definitely fulfills a very important role socially as well, and making spaces more inclusive, more accessible, how we leverage numbers and language systems and so on. And that's definitely the way we can contribute to those two other pillars that also matter in this conversation.
Mm-hmm. if we look at the overall approach, coming back to this, the signage aspect, what is quite interesting is that you actually go for the circular economy approach. You offer the services from the beginning to the end, even taking, you were talking about the modular approach as well, that is quite part of your DNA. But if I look at the services you offer on your website or the things you provide, it's very circular. So what are the elements that you would say are the most important pillars of this like circular economy approach within ModuleX? Maybe going from the beginning to the end. So let's follow the circular economy pathway.
Exactly. So I think that, as you say, you know, even if we offer services to our clients and design and the different services before and after the implementation phase are critical to, I guess, what defines ModuleX. But it's true that to have this circular relationships with clients, you have to start with product design. And we are, I guess, fortunate in that sense to be a company that has been designing in a modular way for 60 years. That's pretty much our name and our brand. And it's thanks to that product design and having decades of clients using systems that can basically be updated in really easy ways that we've been able to build a model, a project model and a service model around that, that enables us to work in a more circular way. So it will all start with, you know, the planning stages and the design stages of any given project. And those are also going to very much define what type of product eventually will make sense for that client. Not every client has the same updatability or flexibility needs. So we very much adjust that to every case scenario. And eventually, when that planning phase and sort of takeoff phase design and wayfinding stages are over, then we move ahead into rolling out our designs and implementing that. And it's precisely at that point when I would say the circular relationship can start with a client, because that's the point where, you know, the product and the brand touch points, the signage elements are put in place. And eventually the client will be able to continue working with us as they have updates to their brand, to their signage systems, updates to the layout of the buildings where they operate. And we're basically able to keep the system alive with minimal changes, being able to take back materials, being able to offer the new replacements that allow that system to continue working. And essentially in the long term, after 2-3 decades, what this will mean is that our clients can keep their branding and their signage up to date with any changes, whether it's regulation or brand updates, stuff like that. And basically do that with minimal waste, with an ongoing relationship, without having to, you know, renew the entire system or incur in larger expenses than what is needed. And eventually what it means for us is that we're able to circulate back those raw materials into the same supply chain that they came from and either recycle them locally or reuse them directly in other projects, which is actually the entire point of modular systems, is that they make signage, which would usually be a one lifetime product that, you know, no one else can use that because no one else will have the same logo as you or the same type of image, and we're able to strip that down and add new graphics, and that sign can then be used for another life cycle. So we also circulate that back into other projects, and it sort of creates this idea of an ecosystem between clients, which I think is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. It sounds very interesting, but I mean, you can actually give back old signage to ModuleX and then switch it for new ones. I mean, I do understand that within the module system, so you basically get like new modules and give back the old modules. When you take back the signage, you mentioned that you are going, well, some of them you're going to clean and reuse. Do you have other recycle processes that you implement within the company?
Yeah, so we have, I think, a variety of options. It depends on the raw material. It depends on the location of the client. We would always aim for the most environmentally sound option. It doesn't make sense to ship back, you know, elements from the other side of the world back to Denmark just for the sake of reusing that. So there are scenarios where we will consider what the best end of life is locally for certain components and stuff like that. The renewal process, and I guess the flexibility still remain true for the client, but the disposal is a little bit different based on where that client is based. In the best case scenario, say for example, a client in Scandinavia, the ideal situation would be to reuse, directly reuse as signage products, those components that can be stripped down of paint and of graphics, and basically be able to add them in stock again until a client orders that component and then being able to give that element another life. If not, we would also go for the most environmentally sound method available, usually with most of the raw materials that we work with, such as aluminium or acrylic, for example. You would be able to recycle them locally and they would get either remanufactured into a new product or basically find a second use. And otherwise, a very common method in Scandinavia as well, then we also have waste that we incinerate that is used to generate energy. Not as ideal, I would say, as for example, reusing raw materials directly, but not all components can be reused. Of course, after, you know, 30, 40 years, some components eventually from a functional perspective also have to be sort of removed. But that's more or less how we would approach it. So it's a very project-based decision, as much as a material-based decision. And we try to look at what the best options there are for the client and for the impact generated as a result.
Mm-hmm. Since we were already on the topic of materials, that was, I think, one of the first things I personally discovered about Modulex, which fascinated me, were your innovation projects on recycling different materials to create signs. Can you talk a little bit about the different signage projects you have where you recycle materials? I mean, I like the one with the carpets, for example.
Yeah, that's definitely a nice story there. That's one of the areas that I've been personally involved at Modulex since I joined the company around 6 years ago. And I think it also defines us very much. So we've of course been doing the modular side that we've discussed already for a long time. But the whole idea of developing new raw materials and low carbon materials that are able to basically set up a better benchmark in the industry and replace old or worse materials but that are still very widely used is very much our development and innovation within sustainability at this point in time, and very suitable in or very coherent with the way we also understand innovation. So I think for us, we're a company that chooses to, you know, stay relevant through innovation instead of developing some of these solutions and protecting them. I would say we do quite the opposite. You know, we offer them to even our competitors. So I think we've understood that our goal within the signage industry is not to sort of protect that 1% or 2% share of clients that do pick sustainable materials, but rather increase that share as a whole. And that's why we've really invested in developing these materials. If we look at them specifically, the one that you mentioned, for example, the recycled carpets, that one's called Rebond. And this is quite an interesting collaboration with a carpet manufacturer in Denmark, who we work closely and they're a partner, even if they're in a different industry. And they had an issue with their product and their clients because they realized that the carpets that they manufacture are primarily for the hospitality industry. So this would be cruise ships and hotels as well. And they realized that in the hospitality industry, after a few years, 5, 7, 10 years, all the carpets as well as a lot of the interior fittings are replaced because the industry standard basically doesn't allow for more use. So you will get tons of textile in this case, if we refer to the carpets only, that get disposed, but they are perfectly functional. There's nothing wrong with them. They're of course a bit worn out, but you know, if they were carpets at our house, we would all keep them in use. And there's no second use because, a bit like with the signage, carpets are also unique to that client. They're unique to the cruise ship. They're unique to the architecture. So they can't really reuse them. So essentially what happened is that 10 tons of textile waste that are still functional would either get sent to a landfill or incinerated locally. And they started this project with a lot of different companies. Modulex was not the only one, trying to find out who could develop a commercially viable product out of this. So the goal was to see, well, what can we do with this textile waste? And it took 3 years to develop that, but we essentially figured out to repurpose that textile waste, break it down, add a few fibers that would keep it together as a sign, and then essentially press that into a signage material that can be painted, that can have graphics on it, that can basically be reintroduced as a wayfinding product, ideally back in the cruise ship where the carpet used to be at one point. And I'm happy to say that at least when we launched this solution back in 2023, we were the first of all the projects that were looking into this to develop a commercially viable solution that we actually completed a few projects with in 2024. One of them was a hotel, so it was quite a nice way to close the cycle. And when we developed that, there was always the doubt of whether the whole technology process to repurpose that waste was, in fact, whether it was adding more energy into it to, you know, make this story possible, then it would make sense and maybe it would make the carbon footprint too high. So we had to find out if, after figuring out all of these different steps, whether the carbon footprint of that material, how that would compare to, you know, other benchmark solutions like the typical ACM panels, aluminium composites or acrylic, for example. So we developed a carbon footprint study with a third party in Denmark, a technological institute there, who basically took data for ACM supply chains and for acrylic and then for rebond as well, with the different processes and transport of the entire life cycle. And the carbon footprint turned out to be 63% lower than the average aluminium composite panel. So that was a really nice result, I would say, and we're still working with this material.
Mm-hmm. What would you say regarding the materials? I know that we as designers, and I know some of our clients, there's always the big question, what is actually the sustainable approach?
Mm-hmm.
How can we make our signage sustainable? So yeah. I know it's the whole process, but just regarding the materials and the inks, for example, I'm not even talking about the lighting now, just materials and inks, what would be like decision criteria for clients or us as designers on what a sustainable material is? So which one should we choose? Is it like a wood, or is it recycled aluminium, or is it like the specific recycled projects that you are talking about? Is there any criteria you could mention that would make it easier to actually make decisions on this kind of signage materials?
I think that's a really relevant question, both for our own teams when we try to look for new solutions, but also getting this question from clients a lot. I think my way of understanding this is that there are many different criteria points, and not all products can have all of them, because they are very much tied to the type of material you work with. But in general, you know, if you try to look out for the points that I will explain now, I think you can start to understand that different phases within the life cycle of that material will be lower than if you were not doing that, for example. So I would say that the first point, if we take this chronologically in the life of any given material, I would be looking for renewable and certified raw materials. What do I mean by renewable? Well, if, for example, you're working with some sort of wood substrate, whether that is MDF, some sort of wood composite, high pressure laminates, for example, anything that is paper based, then I would be, of course, looking for certified origins such as FSC, chain of custody, and PFC origins that will ensure that, you know, the wood or the paper that you're working with is harvested in a renewable way, meaning that, you know, there's more trees that are planted in those sources than there are trees harvested. So I think that would be one way of looking at that. If you're looking at aluminium, for example, I know that it's of course an emerging market, but you would be looking for low carbon aluminium and prioritizing that. Otherwise, you would be looking for aluminium that is coming from, you know, global regions where there is more renewable energy. So if you buy aluminium, any aluminium product that is manufactured in Europe or in Iceland or in Sweden, for example, it's going to have a lower carbon footprint than if it's manufactured in Southern Europe, for example, or in South America, Brazil primarily. And the higher end of the aluminium emissions would be aluminium coming from China. But if one day, for example, China decides to develop that with a higher degree of renewables, then that might change. So it's something that, you know, we have to always be investigating. Mm-hmm. The second part, and it's a bit of a cliche one, but I think it's still really important, is sourcing locally. I think that if you source locally, you can both ensure that you minimize the shipping emissions, as simple as that, as having a supplier that, you know, can send a product by truck or train instead of plane, for example. The second good reason of sourcing locally, I would say, is that you can work more closely with your suppliers. And that sometimes means that if you audit suppliers to check that, you know, social standards, environmental standards and stuff like that is upheld, then you can do that much more easily if the supplier is 50 or 100 kilometers instead of, you know, in the other side of the world. So I think that that matters a lot as well. Recycling and recycled content are the typical ones. I think this definitely adds a lot to it, but I also think they're overused. So I usually recommend our own sales team to sort of not fall for that easy label of just using the word recycled, you know, because it can mean a lot of things. A product can be entirely recycled or it can be recycled by a percentage, for example. And depending on what type of material that you're working with, maybe the recycled waste that this material is made of is actually manufacturing waste. So it didn't really go through an entire lifetime. It's just, you know, manufacturing cutoffs that get put into the same production belt and then remade again. So I think that one is probably one that, you know, we have to look more deeply into. And I will finish by of course, addressing the carbon footprint. That's, of course, another one that we hear a lot in marketing and in different sort of mm-hmm. levels of communication. But I think what the carbon footprint means, which in LCA studies is really the global warming potential of a product, is that it gives you one sort of common indicator, almost like a common currency, to understand how all of these decisions throughout the life cycle of the product, from the sourcing all the way to the disposal, mm-hmm. how they translate in an impact figure. In this case,
let me just CO2 have an intermediate question here, because yeah. you mentioned something quite important. The terminology of carbon footprint, yes. is it already like a joint language that we share, or does anybody, like, is there a definite list of elements that define the carbon footprint, or does everybody who uses the same word actually have like a different perception of what the word means? Because I think you mentioned quite an important element, like a common currency, like
yeah.
we know the value of the euro or the pound, and we even know when we take the euro and the pound what their currency rate is. Is it the same with the carbon footprint? Are we talking about the same thing if we use it in our arguments?
I think that it's not a yes or no answer to that question, but I would say that, you know, there's an evolving science behind it that is allowing us to use more and more this carbon footprint or global warming potential mm-hmm. to understand and maybe even internally compare processes and compare different decisions. Everything can have a carbon footprint, so you can look at a service as well. But it's not there yet where, you know, you can compare it as apple to apple and basically, you know, put two products together side by side with different studies carried out in different moments in time by different institutes and so on, and expect them to be, you know, homogeneous data. I think that's not the reality, and probably one of the scenarios where this data is misused a lot. I think it's important, you know, to to recognize that LCA methodology, which is what this is entirely based on, LCA stands for the life cycle analysis. It basically covers certain defined stages. It will cover things like extraction of raw materials. It will cover transport of those raw materials all the way to the installation of whatever product we're discussing, even the use stages of that product, which, for example, in our world, in signage, unless it's an illuminated sign, for example, doesn't really make a difference. And then disposal and recovery. So the main thing that doesn't enable us to compare a lot of the data one by one is that not all studies consider the same phases. Because, for example, if you want to measure the impact of a given product and you want to add all phases in your study, that will cost more money. So we also need to recognize that sometimes you're trying to compare two products, but one of them is only measuring the three first phases of their life, all the way to, for example, when it gets to Modulex, so to speak. And then that would be called cradle to gate. And then there's other studies that do cradle to cradle, meaning that they measure also the product after they leave Modulex, all the way to the client and disposal and so on. So carbon footprint, I think, is one that we have to be careful with. But if you develop studies where the data is collected at the same time and in the same way for the same products and the methodology followed is the same, then it can give you a very good indicator of how, for example, our rebond material compared with ACM, because we measured them and modeled the data in exactly the same way and followed this methodology.
The information that I was able to study in preparation, I've seen that you actually provide a service regarding the calculation of a project. How does that work within the company?
Yeah, that's one of the, I think, most exciting projects for me at Modulex. One of the things we realized when we started working with this service called Carbon Modeling is that, you know, a lot of the times, maybe not only in Modulex, but, you know, in other signage companies out there, sustainability in reality is relegated to, you know, that one discussion throughout the project where you've done design and now you have to talk about the implementation with the client. And then it suddenly becomes important to, you know, think about sustainable materials. So then, you know, you will present the client with a green option. And then once that decision is made, then you sort of feel good about that decision and move along. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to sort of almost, you know, uncover the hidden data in a project like that, that basically, you know, enable us to understand that it's not just up to one decision for one material to make our project green, that there's also a lot of other decisions that increase the carbon footprint of a project, and that sometimes we are making a recommendation or trying to sell a green product, but actually it's not a meaningful change. And the area where there's most impact in the project, we're not making any recommendation. So we sort of started saying we have to figure out a way to be able to model the emissions, not of our products, but of our projects, with everything considering travel, considering disposal, considering raw materials that we can reuse from that client, for example, considering everything. And then once we have that data, we're going to be able to understand how the impact distributes within our project, for example, between different product types, but also between different client sites or different phases. And then when we started to work that way, we realized that, you know, the key part of reducing impact in the project is not when we decide the materials, it's when we design them. It's when we design the project, when we make design decisions, when we decide how big or how small the sign will be or how many signs there will be, and how that product is designed. Because by the time you manufacture that or decide what material you're going to add, most of the decisions have already been made. So with this carbon modeling service, which is basically, you know, us being able to model the impact of the projects we deliver to our clients and then develop that into consultancy to decarbonize projects before they are implemented, we're able to really tap into that granularly. And I think it's been a nice shift away from just talking about materials, you know, and being able to explain what decisions cause those emissions and then make the right recommendations to reduce them.
We're kind of coming to the end of the podcast. It's I would like to to ask like two questions in one as a kind of a final question. And it has to do with the market share. So the first part of the question would be on how you perceive like the market share of sustainable solutions within the signage whole market share as compared to other decisions that we can do, like other deep bond materials. That would be the first part. And the second part is, what can we do to actually, what do you think we can do to actually increase the market share of sustainability, of sustainable signage solutions within the market, as designers, as signage producers, even as clients?
Yeah. I mean, I think they're really relevant questions, because compared to other industries, I don't think the sustainability share in the visual communication, you know, whether it's architectural signage, brand implementation, wayfinding, I don't think it's that high. Unfortunately, you know, we're still generally speaking in an industry where price is king. I think there's not that much awareness in terms of, you know, what investing in visual communication and signage, what benefits that can trigger. Therefore, I would say that, without knowing the exact percentage, of course, but I think that the share of sustainable signage and how clients prioritize that is probably below 5%. It's a minimal part, because we have all of the local sign shops and different, you know, sign players, I would say, in the industry that provide the typical not so sustainable materials, I think. So that's definitely a big challenge in our industry that I think we have to overcome together. And I spoke about this a little bit earlier on, but I think that's why it's super important that companies like us, for example, who are trying to spend resources and drive innovation and drive sustainability to develop new alternatives that can become the new standard in the industry. Our goal with that is not, you know, just to get a competitive edge and lock out, you know, other companies from those solutions. It's quite the opposite. I think that we're trying to increase that global share. And if that means that, you know, we have to make our solutions available to other companies, then we do that, and we work with them, you know, as partners, not as clients. And we spread out the materials, for example. They are available as raw material sheets for other signage manufacturers, even if we only used to sell finished products. But for example, we've started offering that as a way to, I guess, push out the acrylic and push out the ACM and push out the less sustainable options. And I think we're very self-aware as well that it's not entirely, or it's not only up to us. I think that this is a shared effort that, you know, we have to push that agenda within our industry and help clients understand that, you know, with a very similar level of investment, they can also be making the right decisions, and hopefully increase that share by not keeping innovation locked within a few companies that can spend, you know, resources on that, but rather making that available to everyone, specifying that in projects, and hopefully, you know, getting the uptake to increase. So definitely one of the challenges, and that's what we look to work together with others for.
What I will do to improve the market share of sustainable products is I will put the links that you sent me in the show notes of this podcast. There are some quite interesting articles about how to set up a signage project, a sustainable signage project, for example. They will be in the show notes, and it's a good point in time to remember listeners that we have an email address, which is podcast@geraunt.com, where you can leave your notes or comments. And yeah, as I said, that was the final question on a topic I think we can talk, could talk a lot more. But Eric, for this really good insight into how Model X deals with the topic of sustainability and pushes the agenda, thanks a lot for your time, for talking to us. And I hope we can talk on another topic maybe in the future as well. Thanks a lot, Eric.
Thank you very much.